Hello, everybody, and welcome to our last case study call for the year 2020. I bet a lot of people are looking forward to 2020 ending and having some new beginnings happening. So before we jump right in, I want to just welcome some new folks. I see Shelley. Shelley, meet everybody. Hello. You may want to tell everybody a little bit about you. And Kathy, who else is here? That's new. Stephanie was new a couple of months ago. So if you want to just like in a 1 minute, who am I, Kathy? Go ahead and tell everybody who you are and why you're here and why you're excited about being here.
I'm from Sacramento, California. I've been a health coach for 3 years and basically learned nothing. And so that's why I'm here, because I'm so excited about Dr. Marie and what she teaches and what all of you have, at Shine and all of the other times talked so highly of her. And she's everywhere. You are everywhere. Every time I get an email, it's like, it's Dr. Marie is the guest host. It's so, I'm just like, oh my, I'm in the right place. So I'm very, very excited. I met my friend Shelley in Wow. And I'm just thrilled to be here.
And we're thrilled to have you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. And Shelley, you introduce yourself too.
Wow is the Shine Wow combo. I heard someone call themselves a rewired nurse instead of retired. And since I'm
rewired, I like that.
I like it because it's not that I'm, trying to rebel hard against nursing, but I'm just so glad to be in something that's productively, proactively enhancing people's lives instead of being at the tail end of it where it's just depressing, really. I mean, yes, you can have some wins, but still. So I've been a nurse all my life, basically. And from 14 on, but so I am thrilled to be here. I, like Kathy, have been in a coaching program previously that I thought that I would learn something, and maybe I did some overall conceptual things, but I already knew them. And so I was highly disappointed after 14 months that I feel like I probably could have passed the final starting off. And I feel like already I've learned so much more just in the first module that even applies to myself and some other people I've known. So just answering some little questions along the way. Thank you, Rita Marie, because you have always had these little niggling questions. And just as I'm reading through her lecture, she confirms and validates so much as I go through, and I'm just thrilled with it. I just love it. So so anyhow.
Thank you. I welcome you guys for being here. We had a couple of other new people who haven't shown up yet, but thank you guys for, taking the plunge. This is an amazing group of people, all with huge hearts and huge heads. And that combination of heart and head is what really helps us change the world of healthcare, which has to happen, right? In order to save people's lives and to really help people through the crises that they are going through. It's interesting because over the weekend, it was on Thanksgiving Day, we had a family, because we usually go to Chicago to visit my husband's family in Chicago. And this time we had a home Thanksgiving. And we were on the Zoom call. That's how we've been meeting with his family all year. And so we're on the Zoom call, and the subject of vaccinations came up. So my brother-in-law said, do you mean to tell me that even if, once these vaccines are approved, that are you going to get one? I said, over my dead body, will I get a vaccine? And he's like, but why? The whole success of the program depends on certain numbers of people. I'm like, if it was effective, it wouldn't matter. That one person would be immune and the rest of the world would get sick and it wouldn't bother that person because it was effective. And he goes, that's not the way they work. I'm like, good. And when they create something, this is RNA and it's not like attenuated viruses like the others. I'm like, that's great, but what else are they putting in there, right? What else is there? Is it free of aluminum? Is it free of mercury? Is it free of all kinds of weird things we can't pronounce and we shouldn't have in our bodies? And they didn't have the answers to that, but they just thought I was nuts. I said, look, if you're going to guilt me into taking a vaccine because that'll save the rest of the world, I'm going to guilt you back because I'm taking care of me by taking care of my nutrition. I'm taking care of my sleep. I'm taking care of all the things that actually create immunity. And I'm teaching other people to do the same. You're sitting around eating garbage, drinking you know, he doesn't drink. So eating crap food, eating a lot of sugar, and depressing your immune system, so you're making it more likely for you to pass this and plenty of other things on to other people. I said, and I got really kind of because I usually don't talk about this stuff with them unless they bring it up and then try to get me into doing what they think is the right thing. But that's the problem with this whole medical system, is that people are brainwashed. Intelligent people are brainwashed into thinking that all they need to do to protect themselves is get injected with this substance and they're good, right? This is the world we're up against, and we are armed, and it's getting way better, right? The more we learn and the more we can appeal to people's rationale. Oh my God, there's already 25 messages in there. But that's the thing. This is why we do what we do. Because rational people are brainwashed into thinking, as soon as it's ready, here we go, just inject me and then I'll be safe, right? And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Anyway, that's why we do what I do. And I am all the time getting reinforced, right? This is a guy who's had a high blood sugar, high blood pressure, on multiple medications, hip replacement, you know, just recently had something done, some kind of surgery. Oh, his hemorrhoids removed recently. Like, all of these things that we know are preventable and reversible with diet and lifestyle. And you want to talk to me about a vaccine that's going to save the world? Not buying it. Sorry, not buying it. Anyway, that's my soapbox for today. I always get into a soapbox. Pretty often I get into a soapbox. Let's see. What is this? Okay. Let's see. I'm just looking. There's Angelica. Love 2020 and all. It's been teaching us a lot, hasn't it? All right, cool. Yeah, I'm one of the so-called 10% that doesn't detox heavy metals well. I don't know if it's just 10%, quite frankly. I think it might be more. I brought that in. I said, I've looked at my genetics. I do not have strong detoxification genetics. So I have to not toxify myself, right? And I don't know about 10%, you know? I mean, there's a small number that get the overt problems with all the vaccines. There's others who, it's a subtle situation, right? And yeah. I may have had us more subtle. I didn't get autistic from taking vaccines, which I did as a kid, but also it wasn't as many vaccines when I was a kid, but I had chickenpox just naturally. How bizarre, right? And I'll have lifelong immunity. Wow, how bizarre. But the point is, like, I don't know what other things that caused me. I had my tonsils out when I was four. I had a bone tumor when I was nine. You know, I had all kinds of things go wrong. Do we know? Was that because we introduced toxins into my system unnaturally? We'll never know that. I didn't develop autism. Thank you very much. I didn't die, right? But some kids do. And it's Russian roulette, because we don't know how each individual person is going to react to getting toxins injected directly into their bloodstream, bypassing all their normal immunity, right? So I feel very strongly about this. I don't speak about this in public. So if you hear me getting very vocal, I don't talk about this because I want to stay alive and I don't want to get banned and I don't want to get somebody to come to my house and, you know, kill me or something, which has happened to people. But I think that, you know, is there time? Maybe there is a time when an immunization is helpful, you know, going into a jungle that's just loaded with dengue fever or whatever, who knows, right? I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say never, but we don't even know about this particular virus, what its long-term behavioral patterns are. They're already finding people who had it and no longer have the antibodies. So why are we going to spend billions of dollars to inject people to protect them against something that we don't even know if there's long-term immunity? Anyway, I'll stop. Sorry. Yeah. I think we all have to kind of be careful. And a lot of things, a lot of reasons that we end up here, right? Doing this health coaching and, you know, helping people is because we've had some bad reactions with our own health. And then we've turned to things like herbs and food and nutrients. Huh, weird, bizarre, radical things like herbs and nutrients and foods that we've turned to, and meditation and sleep that we've turned to and gotten our health back. And now we're like, okay, we want to help other people because it's like the best kept secret in our modern world. So anyway, thank you guys for listening. And welcome to Shelley and Kathy. All right. So usually we have cases submitted on these, and I'm looking at my cases. I'm going to answer Michelle's question, and then I'm going to look again to see if the cases I have in there are new. And otherwise, it's just like open, ask me about people and cases. And elderly client with herniated disc. That's a great question. So I'm going to ask you a few questions about that. Is it a herniated and escaped disc? Like, is the piece broken off and free floating in the, you know, around the cerebral spinal fluid and all that? Do you know that?
I don't know that specifically. What I do know is that she says that it's pretty much dissolving, you know, so it's like not there. And she's concerned because her doctor talks about having surgery, but all the other people that she talks about says, heck no, don't do it.
Right. So here's the deal, right? Yeah. And I've worked with both types of people, and I've had a lot of work with herniated disc cases in my, you know, career of hands-on and manipulation. So if it's escaped and there's a piece, free-floating fragment floating around, it's more likely to need surgery. I'm just going to say more likely to need surgery, but I have worked with people who have had that, and I thought they were going to need surgery, and we did what I'm about to tell you about. So there's a technique called Cox Flexion Distraction Technique, COX. Mm-hmm. And I think he's an osteopath that created this technique, and it uses a special table. I have one sitting right over there, my flexion distraction table. And you're basically putting somebody on this table, and you're going to do some therapies around it, like acupuncture and pressure points if they won't take needles, or if you don't have the ability to do needles, and some massage and things like that to work trigger points and all. But basically, think about it this way. Usually when people have a herniated disc, it's because the discal material between these, think about these as the two vertebrae. There's this discal material. Usually there's some kind of something that compressed in and causes a bulge at one side or more, right? And so what we're doing with this, and think about this. So see, you have this here, and just natural aging, right? As we age, if we're not keeping fit and all, the spaces between the vertebrae get smaller. And think about how people get shorter as they get older. There's a phenomenon there, and it has to do with the losing the flexibility and the moisture that's in there. And they can lose a couple of inches if you add it all up. So what this table does is it puts them on here, and then it does this thing. It pumps. And what happens when you pump it open like that is that the material gets sucked back in, right? And it stretches. And then you also work the musculature, and there's a very specific technique. I have this whole book on it. It's all kinds of great stuff. My experience with this, my very first person that I worked with this on, was he came to our house. He was a pool salesman, and we were living in California at the time. And I was like maybe 3 months out of school. I mean, literally a newbie. And he came in with this big back brace on, and I started asking him what it was. He'd already had a surgery. They wanted to now go do another surgery and fuse his spine. And he didn't want to do it. But he was wearing this brace with the hopes that, and I started talking about this, and he said, wow, that sounds interesting. I said, look, if you come in to see me and we do these treatments for like 2 to 3 weeks and it's not 90% better, then, you know, go do whatever you want to do. But this is what the statistics are. And I'm like punting it, right? Because I've never done this with anybody. I've just learned to do it and read about it. So I bring him in and I do my combination of bag of tricks. And I did acupuncture and I worked the trigger points, which I'd been doing for years. I knew how to do that. There's specific ones. And then I did this flexion distraction. And it also included ultrasound and muscle stim. So I just like gave him the whole thing, everything to relax everything. Within 3 days, like he came in and then he skipped a day, came back in. And on the third day, he comes back in. He goes, 90%, you said? I'm already there. And I'm like, what? Right? He was feeling good. he said, can I send my wife in to see you? She has this chronic neck stuff. So his wife comes in and she says to me, thank you for giving me back my husband. Because of his back, we haven't had sex in like 2 or 3 years. And we're having sex again. I'm like, oh, wow. Pretty cool. He never had to have the surgery. We barely did this for a month, whatever, not even. And he was better. I've had other cases that are just as dramatic. I haven't had the cases of like, oh, this subtle thing, because usually when people are in that situation, another guy, he had come in and he had this stuff. He was a friend of, the husband of a friend of mine whose son was a friend of my kid. And they went to the same school. And so he came in, he'd fallen off his bike, very athletic, very fit guy, fallen off his bike. He thought he had, he explained the symptoms and he showed me the MRI report or the CT report. His was escaped. And I said, okay, I don't know. Like, we can try this, but because he had the leg pain was greater than the back pain. And a lot of this is in the musculoskeletal, you know, module that we teach. And I said, I don't know if this is going to work. So two treatments. And he was like, I'm fine. I'm better. I'm like, let's don't go out and start doing crazy stuff. Let's just do this for a while. Let's keep this going. That was it. That's the last time I saw him until about a year later. We're at a birthday party for a kid that's a mutual friend of our kids. And it was at a place that had a gym, trampoline. I see this guy get on the trampoline and be doing backflips on the trampoline. And I'm thinking about his MRI report or CT report and going, he never had a problem again. So even though the party line is that if it's escaped, because that escaped fragment, you never know. You do have to be careful because it's escaped fragment and it can press against the nerve. It can press against the spinal cord. It can cause stenosis. There's a lot of problems. But if it's just a simple herniated disc and you're saying it's already starting to go away, it's starting to disintegrate. Is that what you mean? Or that the disc is starting to disintegrate?
The disc is disintegrating. So I suggested to her to go into a chiropractor and she did. And she said that she got relief, but it only lasted for a day. So what I said to her is that given her age, she probably needs to have consistent chiropractic session.
Not just a chiropractor. Someone who does the Cox flexion distraction technique. And you can look them up. They have a national website. They have people certified. I never got certified in it. I just took one or two classes. So I never was certified. But if you look for that and you find somebody who actually does the process, it's a really good book. It's about $150 textbook, not that big, but has everything that you'd ever need to do it. So if you are somebody who does physical and hands-on stuff, it's a book worth getting.
Is there anything to help her to rebuild the disc and things of that nature?
Well, there's where nutrition comes in, right? So all the anti-inflammatory nutrition we know of, but also chondroitin and glucosamine.
Yeah.
Right. Those kind of things can really help in any, you know, a lot of collagen support, a lot of the nutrients that build good collagen.
Well, I was concerned about the collagen because she seems to react to everything, you know, and I was concerned about, you know, the histamine aspect of.
Yeah. So don't give her collagen. Right. So you give her the nutrients that form collagen, hydroxyproline, proline, glycine, and vitamin C. And also there's, you know, she reacts to everything, probably not the collagen peptides from Sun Warrior, but Lynn, it's at Ananmundi or Anana. There's a company that makes without the protein powder, because a lot of people do react to protein powders and you have to find the right one for them. And they use rice in the Sun Warrior, but this Ananmundi, I think it is, they have a collagen support herbal formula that has all the constituents that you need to build that back. The thing that people don't get about taking collagen is you're taking collagen and the body doesn't say, oh, collagen, let me go repair my disc and take the collagen and slap it where it needs to go. Or it actually has to break it down into its constituent nutrients and then rebuild it. So it's not as efficient a process. I just think, well, why not just give the nutrients that, and it doesn't have to break it down. You don't have to rely on good digestion to break it down. You just use it. That's my opinion. Plus you don't have to worry about the histamine responses and the glutamine. There's usually a lot of glutamine in there and it can cause a problem as well. Glutamate.
And I have, I have one more question, and this is for the group included. I'm looking to find someone in the Houston area who is either a medical doctor or a psychologist that would be willing to work with me and a client.
Is Elaine on here? Elaine's from Houston. I'm trying to think if I know anybody. There is a chiropractor who's a functional medicine doctor there who may know, and his is Rakowski, Rob Rakowski. He's very big in IFM. I think it's, let me look it up. He might be a contact to find somebody who's willing to. What do you need from a medical perspective?
Well, it's because I have a client who has a son that's going into a facility. Mm-hmm. And so we need someone who will be able to do like a quote unquote prescription.
Prescription, right.
So that they will actually abide by the vitamin protocol.
Yep. I'm not sure I'm spelling it right, but Google knows. Bob Rakowski, I did spell it right. Rakawdc, National. He may actually have somebody in his center. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that if you called them and were looking, because they're big into functional medicine. So I'll put this in the chat.
Oh, he's not an NEPT. He's just.
No. He's one of our old time, he's been around, probably started in functional medicine around the time I did.
Okay. Yeah. So I can tell him, I can drop your name and he'll know you kind of thing.
He may not remember me, but I can tell him I'm a DC functional medicine, DACBN like he is. So I have all the same credentials mm-hmm. that he has, but his office may know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or a psychologist or psychiatrist.
He probably know that too. The guy's brilliant. He's written a lot of really good papers and he really knows his biochemistry. And I'm sure he's connected because I'm sure he needs that. There was I can't remember the name though. Somebody mentioned that there was a guy in Houston. I thought it was Houston that had a little a little cafe and a store in his clinic where he was teaching people how to use food as medicine. But I don't remember the name.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. So who else? Did anybody submit a case that I'm missing? Because I looked in the cases and you did?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Didn't have time to submit.
Absolutely.
I can share my screen if that's okay.
Absolutely. Go share your screen.
Okay.
So let me go back before we do this. I just want to go back to Michelle's case. So when somebody presents with a particular set of symptoms, like a disc, right, herniation, those are kinds of questions. So we're going to build our repertoire of questions to ask. And one of them is the disc herniated or is it escaped? I forget the name of it. Does it have a part that's escaped? I can't remember the name of it, darn. But those are kinds of questions to ask. Yeah. Okay. Oh, good. A blood test.
Okay. So this is a 60-year-old lady. She has osteoporosis and also H. pylori infection. And I'm working with her on eradicating H. pylori. And also she's came to me because she's concerned with bone health.
Okay.
So she did her blood chemistry and put her in the optimal report. And I'll just show you through quickly. Blood sugar looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Renal looks okay. Just an overall picture. I'm going to just.
Yeah.
Here.
Nothing obvious here. Chloride's low. She may have some adrenal stuff going on.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Proteins, fine, mineral.
Yeah, overall. And yeah. How old is she? 60. Okay.
60.
So she's not old. Yeah. Yeah. Ocfos is a little low. So zinc is in something to be concerned about.
Yeah. So how significant, Michael, how significant is the ST? AST and ALT ratio?
Well, according to Weatherby, who does this report, that has something to do with the blood sugar balance. But when I look at these numbers, right, 12 and 19, these are perfectly fine. I think this more has significance if one or the other of these is high.
Okay. Right?
I mean, these are optimal, so I wouldn't be concerned about that personally. Okay. Yeah.
Mostly is the iron doesn't look too bad here.
Iron is a little on the low side, it's but that's okay. It's just at the low normal. Ferritin is a little on the higher side, but they're close enough that I'm not concerned. If these were way off, I'd be concerned about inflammation or melatonin or some of the others that can be involved with, but iron looks fine.
Dr. Rita Marie, what if the ferritin was much higher?
Yeah, then I'd be concerned, right? Because it could be an indication of inflammation. I would say when I look at this and talk to people, I would say, let's keep an eye on your ferritin. Let's check it again in like 6 months and see. Cholesterol's high-ish. Triglycerides are good. Mm-hmm. HDL, you know, so her HDL, triglyceride HDL ratio is actually good. It's in the optimal range, or LDL is in the optimal range. So her LDLs are a little high and the cholesterol. If this person has a history, family history of heart disease, I would just say as a precaution, get a advanced lipid panel. Look at her LP little a, because you don't want to get blindsided by that being elevated, and look at her particle sizes.
Okay.
And we haven't seen it. I'm sure there was C-reactive protein in here is the other one. C-reactive protein and homocysteine as well.
Okay. Yeah, her homocysteine is not, that's a little
high. It's a tiny bit up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's look at her when I see homocysteine a little high, I want to look at MCV to see if that's also high. Because given the normal values of iron, if that's a little high, then we're looking, you know, to confirm B12, B6 and
four. Yeah, you'll see that. What I'm thinking. And so I have her check her parathyroid.
D is way low. If she's osteoporosis, she's got to get her D way up.
Oh yeah, D is way low.
And her parathyroid's normal.
Yeah. But her CBC is a little bit.
Her CBC is off, her MCV is high. So confirming, you know, B12 or folate or B6, mm-hmm. Given, you know, any one of those three, the MCV is usually more B12, B and folate. So you'd want to look at that. And if you really wanted to confirm, you'd do an methylmalonic acid, MMA.
Okay.
Her red blood cells are low, her hemoglobin is low, and her hematocrit is low. So what I would be looking at is B6 is something I would be looking at, because her iron is normal, mm-hmm. and her hemoglobin is low. There's an enzyme that requires B6 to convert, to create the hemoglobin from the iron. And if the B6 is low, and that's confirmed with a slightly high homocysteine, slightly out of optimal range. So I'd be looking at B6 as a potential problem. And these are all in the same ballpark. So that's what I would look at there. And then the B6B. So, you know, off the cuff kind of approach would be, hey, she's got slightly elevated homocysteine, these others that indicate like a B6, B12 and folate kind of supplementation for a while to see what goes on, if that helps.
Okay. Then and folate, if she could get a test done from blood, that's pretty accurate. Right?
It's fairly accurate though, although it's not going to show the different types of folate. So it could be the synthetic. Does she take any vitamins that have folate in them? Because I'd be concerned about her getting synthetic folate, folic acid.
Okay. Right. She switches her vitamin. Okay, I'll check that.
Yeah. Right. Because you can get that and it looks okay, but really the functional amount of folate would not be good if it's all synthetic and she's getting it from those. How's her green leafy intake?
Not enough. I don't think she gets enough, like 3 or 4 servings. she needs not more. Eating. She's still like 1200 calories. I think it's a bit low.
Is she overweight?
No, she's not. She's not underweight. She's ideal.
I mean, that just may be her metabolic rate if she's not very active. If she's very active, 1200 calories a day is low, and that might be a downregulated metabolism.
Yeah, she is exercising and walking, I would say like 2 hours a day.
2 hours a day?
Yeah, 2 hours. She does walk like for an hour, and then she does like maybe a strength training exercise, maybe 3 times a week. So there's some days she's doing.
So she's doing the exercise piece of the osteoporosis. How long ago was she diagnosed with osteoporosis?
About 2 months ago.
Okay, so recently. So have you looked at the eating for bone health stuff that we have with the those herbs, right? Getting her on those herbs can be dramatic.
Yeah. So I have her do like an H. pylori tea, also with the nettle, with the horsetail, and with those other one, alfalfa.
Alfalfa.
Yeah. So, okay. And then some sea vegetables.
Good. Yeah. Those are all good. And the H. pylori, when was that diagnosed? Has she had that for a while, you think?
Yeah, no, she thinks that she had it for a while.
Yeah.
And that was just recently, same thing, recently confirmed.
Okay. That. Yeah, so is it like the Metula tea? Is that what you're giving her?
No, I'm not using, sweet metal. I'm using the different antibacterial herbs. I had having her rotate. I'm doing biocidin as a rotation as well. And then I have her do like a also in the tea with the mushrooms powder as well.
What about mastic gum? That's highly effective. Have that in there? Great. Yes, okay.
Mastic gum is in there.
Great.
Yeah. So she's doing like a tincture, like every day she's drinking that. Or
you know, mastic gum is a gum, right? And it, I'm not sure about tincture form being as effective as a powder or a...
Oh, no, I have her open up and then make like she makes these teas and I have her mix everything together and drink it as a tea.
Great. Yeah, that sounds good. And you had good results with that kind of formulation before?
I did. I actually tried it the first time with my husband and he, like all his symptoms disappear. We didn't retest. So, but all the symptoms disappeared. But then when he started eating, you know, crappy food, the symptoms came back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's the stuff you can't control, right? This person sounds like she's a little more compliant than maybe your husband.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll get her retested and she's doing 2 rotations so that's 60 days. So after 60
days, perfect. And here's what I usually recommend with that is if it comes back that she no longer shows for H. pylori, I will keep her on that for another month.
For another month? Okay.
Yep. Uh-huh. And then gradually wean her off of it and then retest it another 60 days.
Okay.
So she'll be another month on it and then a month off of it and then see if it comes back.
Okay. She can't wait to be off the tea. She's like, it's so much trouble.
Yeah, but you don't want to stop it too soon because it'll come back with a vengeance.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, when I usually do it with people, I'll have them continue it another two months. If it's still gone, then I go ahead and wean them off and then test in another 2 months to make sure. It's a stubborn thing. Like if it's, you know, it's been around a while, which most of the times it is, it does take a little bit of concentration to get rid of it.
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah.
A question about the iron anemia. Is there some kind of genetics that can be involved in that would make anemia quote unquote hereditary or?
I haven't found that gene yet. I found like a hemochromatosis gene, which would make elevated iron hereditary, but I haven't. I mean, none of the reports that I've used actually go into that.
Because I'm asking because I have very, very low iron. My mother has very, very low iron. In fact, now they're going to be doing a colonoscopy and endoscopy because they're concerned about how low it's getting. For me, they wanted to do a blood transfusion. My sister has very low iron.
And well, then that sounds like there probably is. I just don't know what that marker would be. Have you done any searches like in the Snipedia or any of the other?
No, I just thought about it when Isabella brought up her case, you know, because I'm wondering if it's more about one of the root factors, you know, so if maybe because all of us have digestive issues.
Yeah, I was just going to say digestion makes a huge difference. Lynn just posted a link. SNPs linking TNF with anemia. TNF gene. Yeah, so check out the link that she just put in here. I'll take a look at this. This would be good to know. And then the other question does it show in the 23andMe raw data? Because I haven't seen it in any of the reports, but yeah. Cool. Can we do a class on iron issues? There is in the micronutrients module, which is part of level 2, there's a whole thing on iron in there, right? There's every single nutrient has at least like an hour kind of an approach. Cool. All right, continue.
So her white blood cell is also low.
Yeah.
She does have sinus kind of congestion. She's taking
four. But look, her eosinophils are way high. Yeah, so that would probably be related to that. Monocytes are above. When I see low white blood cells and high monocytes, I'm looking at autoimmune as a possibility. Right, monocytes can be, it's acute. Yeah, monocytes is either acute, like they just are getting over a cold. But if you were to look back at previous blood chems, I often see that monocytes have been elevated for a long time. And that usually means something chronic. Usually it's autoimmune, especially with the low white blood cells.
Okay, this is not the case, right? Her monocytes not.
No, her monocytes are high. They're above optimal.
You're talking about eosinophil?
No,
monocytes. I'm looking at the
yeah. Anything above like 7, even I think is you know there's an indication that there's a problem there.
Autoimmune.
And especially with the low white blood cells. Okay. So the first thing I think, of course, is looking at thyroid, especially when you say she does all that exercise and only eats 1,200 calories a day and maintains her weight.
Okay.
So there may be some thyroid did you test thyroid antibodies?
She's going to see her endocrinologist, so hopefully they'll do it.
Yeah.
Her regular doctor won't do it. So
the other things, potentially if that doesn't show up, it's potential like intrinsic factor antibodies are possible, especially given she's had H. pylori and there's some stomach disruption. There's probably some irritation of the endothelial lining there.
And also if the HDL is too high, goes too high, is it also an indication of autoimmune?
Autoimmune.
How high is considered?
You know, usually if it goes above 90, what was hers? It was like 75.
96.
What is
96.
It?
Yeah.
What was hers?
96.
Oh, 96. Oh, yeah. I was reading it as 86. Sorry. Yeah, that can be an indication of, that's an inflammatory marker when it gets too high. I'm for sure over 100 is a red flag, but certainly raises suspicion if it's over 90.
So in this case, then how do we go about like determining what
if there's autoimmune? An autoimmune? You know, doing a complete history to see what other areas might have symptoms. I mean, the first one that came up here would be thyroid and stomach, right? So because that's where she's having. I mean, she's not complaining about problems with that, but if she's on 1,200 calories a day with all that exercise, she probably has a slowed down metabolism. Now it might be from chronic dieting. It may not have to do with it, but I would look at the thyroid. You could do a Cyrex or Cyrex or A5, or there's the Zoomer. Don't they have the, which one of the Zoomers? One of the Zoomers will test for antibodies.
Okay.
But the easiest and most inexpensive is to start with the thyroid, because it's so common.
Okay.
Does she have constipation? Does she have?
Now she does. I think she didn't used to. They put her on the for osteoporosis. There's a medication for it. I don't remember.
Osmax.
And she has been having problems. She was on for maybe a week, and she was having a lot of problem with bowel movement. And she did a colonoscopy. So her bowel movement is not regular ever since then.
And did the colonoscopy come back normal?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It could be anywhere, right? What else about her digestion? People say, I have great digestion, until you start to really ask them, how often do you have bowel movements and how easy is it to pass? And people think that getting bloated and gassy after a meal is normal because they've had it their whole life. So really digging in and drilling down to various places. So that's a starting point for determining autoimmune. Does she have any joint pains? Does she have muscle pains? So all the different things, think in terms of all the different autoimmune conditions we know about. Does she have dry eyes? Does she have, dry mouth? That would be like a Sjogren's syndrome. Does she have really stiff joints, something like a scleroderma? Because a lot of times, as we talked about at the event and also the WOW challenge before that, a lot of times these symptoms go on and on for years or even decades, and they're subtle enough that people just think, well, doesn't everybody have joint pain? There's all these arthritis commercials and there's all these commercials for NSAIDs. And in reality, they've had these issues for a long time. So, one of the definitives is that Cyrex, and I can't remember the one from Vibrant, but there's one of the Zoomers, but that's got, 36 different antibodies. It's $550, so it's not cheap, but it will definitely pick things up before the manifestations are there in terms of symptoms. And you said, does she say she's off gluten and dairy and has done an elimination diet?
Yeah, she is.
Okay. How long has she been off of those things?
She's been off gluten and dairy for a long time now.
Okay.
For maybe a year or two. Or she always has been off gluten and dairy. I just don't know if she has accidental exposure.
That's the thing that we need to be careful about. I was just listening to a talk yesterday by an herbalist, and he was talking about this person who was like, I'm gluten-free, I'm doing all this, and suddenly had this flare up, and turned out she was making these gluten-free pancakes. She had this gluten-free pancake mix and had buttermilk in it. Well, she was so sensitive to the dairy that it was just the tiny, tiny amount that was in this mix that triggered it. And there's lots of stories like that. So it's just being, when we talk to people about elimination diets and going gluten-free, dairy-free, whatever their sensitivities are, we really have to point out that even the slightest accidental exposure can be a trigger, and that they really need to look at that.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anything else here?
Nothing else here.
What are her hormones like? I mean, if she's osteoporotic at 60, has she had hormonal imbalances for a while? Low estrogen. I mean, certainly with an osteoporosis kind of person, I would be looking at a Dutch test and looking at the 16 hydroxy in particular. And, she may have some genetic SNPs that are predisposing her to low 16 hydroxy, which is the estrogen metabolite that would be protective of bone. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? Anybody else have any insights or things you want to add here? Yeah, the low creatinine could be she's not getting enough protein, or not digesting enough protein. And with an H. pylori, I'm not surprised, because that affects protein absorption. And
H. pylori is affecting a lot of.
And the high eosinophils, definitely food sensitivities, but also parasites. It can be parasites as well. So we always go through the obvious first, and then we drill it down, and then we look for the, yeah, parasites are not as common as we might think, but they're more common than we might think.
Yeah, we're doing a gut zoomer test in a couple weeks, so we'll find out.
That'll give you a lot of good information.
And also, she didn't test for a TPO. Any amount of TPO, it's not acceptable, right?
Yeah, I would say, you know, certainly it needs to be under 10. Okay. I mean, there may be a small amount that's basically the thyroid reacting to like sloughing off of cells, and then it's attacking those cells. But anything over 10 for sure is, I think, problematic. And, you know, the higher it goes, the more it's of concern. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a comment about 23andMe. So a while ago, I did 23andMe for me and for my kids. And I mentioned it on the Facebook
website
too, that there was a discrepancy of between two, my two kids have the same. So I'm different. So which was, you know, which was more relief, like, you know, they're my kids, there are two of them are the same. And then, so I emailed them 23andMe, and they—
But was it the 23andMe? I mean, did you actually go into the raw data to confirm
I went into, I looked at the RSID, looked at all that, and it was different. And I ran the detoxification report on all of us. So there's still discrepancy. So the discrepancy was, the error was in the raw data. So I called them, I emailed them, customer support, told them about the problem. So they redid my sample and redid my results. So I just got it last week and I looked at it this morning. So that discrepancy I found has been corrected. So now it's showing up the same as for
me. Was there anything else in there that was problematic?
I don't know. I think
compare the two. I mean, at least start with the genetic detoxification report, the genetic genie reports, just like look to see if there's any obvious differences. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, that is. So I haven't found any. So I'm thinking of taking the two raw data report, put them in Excel, and then see if I find any other.
Yeah, I think there might be a thing in Excel where you can compare two files.
Yeah, I can compare
two files. And then have them tell you what's might be different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, so I asked them, I don't know if they're going to have an answer. Like, I wonder what was wrong with the first sampling.
Yeah, what could go wrong? I mean, I've never seen anything like that. But of course, you're not looking at, we don't, normally don't have the comparison with parent and child to be able to compare. You know, we can run them multiple times. But
so that's hopefully, I guess, run your kids and then you'll know if there's any discrepancy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right. Well, thank you for that. That was very enlightening. Did anybody have questions about any of that? I know for Kathy and Shelley, it was your first time on a case study call. How was that? It probably didn't blow you out of the water, but was it helpful, useful? Yeah?
Yes.
I always find those little tidbits helpful.
Yeah. Dr. Rita Marie, can I share a funny story?
Sure, I love funny stories.
One of my clients, he called me the other day and he said that his mother, who is 97 years old, they were concerned about her because she's been having several issues and the doctors have confirmed that she has colon cancer. But the doctor said that she's so old that they wouldn't bother doing the surgery because it would be more harmful, more than likely, for her. So they called in the hospice people, you know, to come in and help them with what's going on and to help her with the transition. So apparently part of this process has been that they have been taking her off of her other medications. So he called me and he's like, I don't know what's going on. You know, we took mama off of all her medications and now she's feeling so much better. I think I may have to call the doctor and ask him some questions. And I was like, why don't you ask him any questions? Just say glory, hallelujah.
Exactly. people don't realize how much interaction, you know, year after year, decade after decade of what those medications are doing. And I love hearing a story like that. Like, she should get rechecked. Maybe the colon cancer will go away. And, you know, if she starts to do some really good dietary things and maybe some,
she's not going to do any of those things.
She's not going to.
I said, you know what, just thank God and say, hey, let's enjoy mama.
Enjoy the last, maybe she'll have years be ahead of her.
You know, I think you would be jinxing it to actually call a doctor. Because I said, what are you expecting him to say? He already gave his prognosis and diagnosis, sent you to hospice, so leave him alone.
He wrote you off. And he's not going to admit that he gave her medications that were hurting her.
I said, are you willing to have them tell you to bring her in to be poked and prodded and tested and retested? I said, because that's all they're going to do.
That's all they're going to do. Yeah, that's crazy. Lynn, what did you have to say?
So my dad's 83, and his doctor had suggested maybe he try like a day of fasting. And my dad's like, what, are you crazy? But he did it. And he called me up and he goes, you know, I always thought you were crazy. Can you help me do a fast that's a little longer? So,
oh my,
I'm just saying, you know, we drop little nuggets, eventually someday
picks up for somebody else. Yeah. Shelley asks, any thoughts on 23andMe versus Self-Decode? I just signed up for a year, whatever it was. They were having a special $148 lifetime subscription to Self-Decode. So I signed up for it, and I have, I think I loaded up my raw data, but I haven't done anything with it yet. I didn't do their genetic testing. I've done, So I will look at that, because I don't think it was that much more to get them to run the DNA, and I want to compare it to like how it looks. I'm comparing a bunch. I just haven't done it yet. I have two other kits. Well, one of them I already sent in. I just have to look at the report, and it was through Aperion Genetics. And then the other one is through a company that was run through IQU or something like that. And then they had some trouble, so they're going to be redoing that, and they'll resend me my kit. Now, Ben Lynch also just came out with one. And I have to look to see more carefully, like which SNPs, and because he's claiming that, you know, he has some SNPs at 23andMe and nobody else that has, and then others that they don't. I think they only do about 150 SNPs, not tremendous amount like 23andMe. And then I'll look at that. So I'll be able to compare them, because people ask me all the time, and I want to be able to have done multiples and then compare them to each other. Yeah. You have a funny nutrition story too?
I do, from when I was in the hospital. And the longer I'm out of the medical field formally, the more I think my stories are interesting. So I had a patient who was dying. He had massive internal bleeding. I was on the med-surg floor. And so I was hanging blood on him, and he didn't have that much longer. And he was in extreme pain and started getting angry, and he ripped his IVs out. So the problem was that the family, they're basically just waiting to put him on hospice. If we couldn't give him any meds through IV, then he is a goner, right? So the family really wanted the rest of his family from all over the United States to be able to fly in and say goodbye to him. So they're asking me, isn't there something we can do to keep him alive just a little bit longer so that everybody can keep him, you know, can say goodbye and have their family moment and can be more of a celebration of life, you know, that whole thing. They're a very close family. So I asked the doctor if I could do an enema with nutrients in it, because he wasn't wasn't hydrated, and he had no nutrition, no staying power. And I didn't think she'd say yes. So I created quite the stir, because she said, sure, go whatever you want to try. I mean, he's going to die anyway, right? I guess we all are, right? So that was my thought. So I put in turmeric and green drink and a little bit of ginger and aloe vera. And I don't even remember what I put in anymore. But the point is, he lived. We took him over to hospice after a couple of days. And his family still wasn't there, but they started trickling in over the next week or so. He lived another 30 days at least.
Wow.
I mean, it might've been like 35. He just wouldn't die.
Wow.
So, yeah. And we had stopped all of his hydration. Like once we went over across the street to hospice, they pulled all of his fluids and everything.
So he was on no fluids for 30 days after the, did you continue to give him enemas to hydrate him or was it just?
We gave him just like two or three once he went across the street. And then after that, they said no more, you know, they cut us off. So I just thought it was fascinating that he lasted that long.
I wonder how long he would have lasted if you had been able to continue those, right? To continue to hydrate him and nourish him through the other end. I wonder how much longer he would have lasted.
Or if his internal bleeding might have resolved from a decreased inflammation.
Right, right. Wow, it's powerful, you know, the power of nutrition and simple things like hydration and nutrients, right? Has such an amazing impact on people and their longevity and their overall.
Yep.
Just, it's amazing.
And well, the first thing you do in the ER is you hang a bag of fluids and you know, saline and sometimes give people some bicarb or a banana bag with minerals in it. And yeah, but they don't do that for very many people anymore because it works too well. You know, like hyperemesis gravidum that would hang a bag of B vitamins and, you know, a bag of fluids and they'd get better. Funny thing. But do you think that they would ever prescribe B vitamins for a patient or tell them to not have their B vitamins on an empty stomach?
Which, you know, it's interesting, right? Because it's not patentable. Right. Therefore, there's no profit.
Right.
Right. So, right. The things that are cheap and inexpensive and or free, we don't do, right? It's free to fast, by the way. Except for whatever percentage of your water bill you can allocate towards the days you're drinking, right? It's free, right? And not everybody can fast. And there's a lot, you know, a lot of issues with that too.
I actually quit a 5-year job at Kaiser. I got this award. They gave me my little 5-year pin. They were all proud of me, et cetera. And I quit because the chief of OBGYN had me hydrate a patient that had hyperemesis. And then, she asked if her multivitamin might have been causing her to be nauseous. And he said, he held up his little finger and he said, your baby's only about this big. She's about 12 weeks pregnant. Your baby doesn't need that much nutrition. That's what he told her. And then he signed her up for his steroid therapy program for a month of steroids so that she wouldn't have nausea. I was so disgusted. I can't be here anymore.
Good for you. So many
stories like that. I just couldn't do it. I felt like a prostitute taking their money and not being able to speak to my patients and speak the truth.
Give the truth.
Right? And she knew intuitively, she's only 15 or 16 years old, Spanish speaking. She couldn't speak any English. She looks at me and she says, because she must have seen my expression. She says, what do you really think about what the doctor said? And I said, well, you're asking me, shows me that you're suspecting something. And I can't really tell you because I'm employed here, but I would say follow your intuition. And if what we just did made you feel good, you might want to go home and think about that. And by the way, don't take your prenatals on an empty stomach. And your blood sugar won't drop if you have protein, you know, at about 4 or 5 in the morning. So set your alarm, have your egg and go back to sleep, struggle through your nausea, and then start taking your vitamins on a full stomach.
Interesting. You know, interesting about that, there's those bracelets, right? That you affect the PC7, I think it is, point PC5. I can't remember, pericardium meridian. And they actually started doing that at Kaiser. They started giving people those bracelets and that plus vitamin B6 can be, and some ginger can be all they need to get over the nausea. Not necessarily for 100% of them, but just simple things. Yes, acupressure on the wrist. So it's this point, if you go from the wrist, go up about, you know, maybe an inch in between the two vessels right there. Oh, it's a little tender. Pericardium meridian. And I've worked with people where I did acupuncture to get them through their pregnancies because they had that nausea. And we actually did it. And I gave them bracelets. You know, I told them to go get a bean and wrap it around your wrist. And pressure on that point, it makes a huge, 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 huge difference. Mm-hmm. And not just for morning sickness, but motion sickness of any kind. I have been known to be sitting on a boat when we used to go scuba diving with everybody around me having nausea from the motion sickness. And I was going around to everybody and showing them where to hold and holding onto their hands. And my fingers were getting really tired. I had to teach other people to do it, but it works. It works really well for nausea. Yeah. Good job. Thank you for, and that's brave of you to quit a job like that, you know, to really stick with your, what you feel is right.
Well, they didn't look at patterns for people. You know, I could go on and on with all the patterns I was seeing, and I wasn't allowed to speak about anything that was nutritionally related because I wasn't a nutritionist or a dietitian.
Yeah.
And yet it's common sense.
Right. And you hadn't been authorized to put people on the Jell-O diet yet. I mean, as a registered dietitian, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions, comments, anything we wanna discuss, or what did Isabel say? I think once I get all Kathy where is she? Kathy, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot there was a chat box. So what module do we start doing case studies?
As far as like learning labs and stuff, that's in the functional assessments, but you learn in case studies every month when you come to these calls.
Okay.
Right from the beginning. And what happens is when you first join, you're like, what the heck? And you're just like taking notes. And then the next thing you know, like on the third or fourth Dutch that you've seen, you start to see those patterns and you're getting an idea of what you see. Right. So I believe we build it up practically. We build up that muscle practically so that by the time we get to the actual content where you're learning it, you've already been exposed and then boom, you get it. Right. Okay. Yeah. I wish I could just like transfer everything all at once. It's like, boom, here you go. Everything's on this little USB drive. Stick it in your ear and you've got it. Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. So, I mean, it's a lot of, you know, there's dozens and hundreds of hours worth of videos and stuff that I made over time. And yeah, I want to go, oh, just jump ahead to this. But if you jump ahead to this, then you don't have enough background about that to really build it on. So we try to help you build it. Once you get past module unit one, which is, you know, the history taken, which is critical skills, so critical, and all the nutritional pieces, you're able to work with lots of people and help lots of people. Then you go into the more details on the nutrition, which is unit two, level two, which is macronutrients, micronutrients, and food principles. Now you're really understanding where all these nutrients get absorbed, what they do, what the symptoms are, how they interact. And then all the footprint like ketogenic and low salicylate, et cetera, and then you're understanding more of like, oh, well, if a person has this going on, I would be more likely to be prescribing or not prescribing, can't use that word, recommending that they consider a low oxalate diet or a low whatever, as opposed to everybody is so bloody food phobic out there right now, right? They go to a summit and they hear about the salicylates and the lectins and the this and the that. And the next thing you know, they don't want to eat anything because if they try to eat something that corresponds to all of those diets, there's nothing left besides water. And then what kind of water should they eat, drink? Reverse osmosis, distilled, spring, Kangen, whatever kind of water. And then people are like, they're afraid, right? And their sympathetic nervous system is so overloaded that they can't be healthy no matter what they do. And that's the people who say, every time I eat, even if I drink water, right? We have to look at deeper causes for that. So yeah, it's just builds on top of it. You know, it's get impatient. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Jill.
Marie, do you know anything about controversy regarding stevia?
You know, I've seen people say like it raises blood sugar. I mean, I've been doing this forever. It doesn't raise blood sugar or insulin. It doesn't, right? It's a green leaf, right? So I think there's a problem when you take the stevia and you pull out the stevia sides and you put them into white powder. But it's a plant, right? It grows in the garden. I used to grow it, right? You can stick leaves of it in your smoothies, right? You can dehydrate it which is, if you're going to use stevia, that's the best way to use it. Just dehydrate the leaves and it stays. Or the best way is actually to grow the plant, right? So I don't know, like, tell me more about the controversy. I know the stuff about people say about blood sugar, and there are people who it will trigger emotional food addiction symptoms, right? Because it's sweet and you go, oh, I want more of that. Let's just drink it out of the bottle or eat it with a spoon, right? Which could be pretty gross because that stuff in large amounts is not very good. But what kind of other stuff have you heard?
Well, it's coming from my hypochondriac client who says that it causes inflammation because I gave her one of the Clairvites from Apex that is like hypo everything, you know? And she's like, oh my God, it has stevia in it and I'm getting a reaction. I was like, oh God, you know what? Just stop taking everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it depends on the kind of stuff, but you know, so of course anybody can be sensitive to anything, right? So we do have to go by the clinical manifestations of it as opposed to the, you know, the studies and whatnot. But I also look at the chemistry as well. So what in it, you know, so yeah, the body might not like the steviosides that are in there. There's chemical. Every plant in excess can be problematic, right? There's stuff in kale. There's stuff in spinach. There's stuff in celery, right? There's all these toxins that are naturally occurring in foods to basically protect the species from extinction, right? Because otherwise, you know, birds and et cetera, we just keep eating the same thing over and over. But the animals haven't lost their instincts about what's good or not in food because weren't born eating M&Ms within the first 3 months, right? So they get it. They go, okay, that's enough of that. Let me move on to this plant or that. We as humans have had our instincts, our food instincts so overridden by the sugar and the processed food. And then emotions like, here, you know, you fell on your knee, here's some candy, make it all better, right? So animals don't go through that, right? When was the last time you saw a dog give their kid dog, you know, M&Ms to help them because they have a boo-boo? It doesn't happen, right? So, and there are those people, like I said, the food phobics, right? She's allergic, she's sensitive, she's scared. She's scared. And part of it is, if you had given her that, and this is a great way to do it, if you had given her some of that without her reading it versus after she reads it, would it have caused the same response?
That's the $1 million question.
But she's probably at the point where she won't put anything in herself unless she's read it carefully.
Yeah. Well, she reads everything and then she Googles everything. So according to her, Google says that stevia is an inflammatory agent. So I'm like, okay.
All right. Find the link. Show me the link. I mean, I'm open to anything, right? And I'm certainly open to the fact that one person can be sensitive to something and nobody else in the world is. But we also have to look at those other issues, right? Mm-hmm. Sympathetic overdrive will create food intolerances, right?
And that's exactly why I told her to just stop, because, you know, the reality is if you think it'll do something, then it actually will do it.
Right.
So I mean, you know, just stop. Stop.
What is that? Who is it that somebody very famous said, if whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Mm-hmm. It overrides. It really does. It does. So Jill, you had something.
Yeah. So I know that fasting is really good for cellular death, you know, helping the body to get rid of bad cells and stuff, but where is the line for someone who is underweight of doing fasting and losing even more weight?
Yeah, it's a fine line. In fact, tomorrow, I haven't even sent out an email about it. I'm going to be doing a webinar hosted by a friend of mine who's a colleague. She's a naturopathic oncologist and she's been studying fasting, and we're going to do a seminar thing together, and I'm going to talk about the fasting mimicking, you know, the research and the using the fasting while feasting. And that's a time where you can get the benefits and you can get into autophagy actually within a few days by doing a fasting mimicking type of an approach, which is what we're going to be doing starting next Sunday with the fasting while feasting. But yeah, I'll be, there should be an email going out, I think sometime today, that has a link to her webinar that we're going to do together to introduce her people to the fasting while feasting. And then we're going to do it together. So come to those calls and ask your questions and right. But because that's the thing, she says, and one of the topics she's going to cover tomorrow night is who shouldn't fast and when should you not fast? Because it can be phenomenal for cancer. But on the other hand, you also don't want to get so depleted.
Well, right. If a person has already done a little fasting, lost a bunch of weight and is at that borderline, you know, I mean, I myself had a fasting experience where I went down to 80 pounds and I could see my ribs and everything. And that was with a very, very short, like 3-day fast. I did 3 days. Yeah.
How much weight did you lose in 3 days? That sounds
at least probably 30.
30 pounds in 3 days?
20 to 30 pounds in 3 days.
I have never seen that. Holy cow.
So it was not a good situation. That was, you know, but I'm actually asking this question for my husband because I saw you were going to do fasting with, you know, feasting and he's concerned about going under the line because he's already lost a lot of weight. And there's that whole idea of muscle, you know, is there muscle wasting going on? You know, if that's right. already too low and then you go into another fasted state.
Right. Yeah. There are definite considerations. So have them come to these sessions with Heather and asking, you know, because these are great concerns. She works with cancer patients every day.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I do have to.
And why, you know, why my body did that years ago, you know, it certainly put a chink in my brain about not wanting to do fasting for very long.
I fasted for 28 days and I dropped 23 pounds in 28 days. Yeah. That's more like what you would expect. I was very thin. I was 92 pounds. I think my ribs showed, I looked emaciated, but it was very easy using only whole, fresh, good foods to add it back in and maintain my optimal weight. I would say within 3 or 4 months, I was back up to my normal weight.
Yeah, it took me time. I don't know how long it took me to get back up.
That's a lot. That there's something now could say to me that what you lost, I think it's kind of impossible to lose that much fat and that much muscle in 3 days, that you might've been holding on to a lot of fluid, a lot of inflammation in your tissues.
That could be because
you might have been partially dehydrated at that point, and maybe you were already emaciated, but you were holding on to so much fluid that you didn't look like you were underweight until you dropped that 20, 30 pounds of fluid. So
I was wondering too about the insulin resistance, you know, the skinny insulin resistant person, which could have been me at that point in time because I wasn't overweight to begin with, before I started doing the fasting, you know, and I had already gone vegetarian at the time and then went into this fasting. And I did have, you know, person that was monitoring me, but anyway, that's what happened.
I've never heard of anything like that before. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Don't quite want to go there again.
No, I don't blame you. I don't want to go back to 92 pounds again, but you know, if I had to, I had to. But at the time I felt like I was dropping the baggage, the toxic fat that I'd accumulated. I wasn't a fat person. I was never fat. I was like 115 pounds when I started, got down to 92. But it was, you know, I felt like it was like all this extra, whatever fat I had on my body was toxic. It was toxic because of the diet and the lifestyle that I led from the time I was born. And I felt, I mean, amazing after that. That was the turning point in my life and my health.
Well, yeah. And the positive that I had was that my mental state was very, very calm.
Yeah.
You know, from the experience. So I came away just really, really at peace.
Yeah.
But very thin.
But very thin. But if your health was okay when you finished it.
Oh, well, I was healthy. I mean, as far as I wasn't getting sick.
Yeah. So, but if you did this weight and you were down to 80 pounds and you felt good, that to me is the ultimate. Like, okay, you can always gain the weight back, right? And put it on as healthy weight versus unhealthy weight. A lot of times people freak out about getting underweight, right? They'll say, oh, I'm 105 pounds. I don't want to lose any more weight. But So what if you go down to 95 pounds, you can always gain it back, but you're getting rid of unhealthy baggage and putting it on, assuming, you know, you're not losing muscle weight and all that. You probably lost a lot of, but I don't see how you could lose 20 to 30 pounds of fat or muscle in that time. It had to be fluid.
And okay.
It had to be. There's no way. I mean,
which would have been, if I was insulin resistant, that's, it still would have been, that's a state of inflammation. So it would have been.
Yeah. I mean,
because the water weight.
More than just insulin resistance. There was some, there's definitely some other, you know, some other factors going on there, right? It'd be great to go back in time and be able to have, you know, blood tests from everybody from that. They did that in the, I think it was the Army or the Air Force or some militia type thing. And they had just were collecting blood from people. You know, they just normally did that and they had this bank. And then they went back to people who had later developed various diseases to see what the state of their blood was back in the day when they were these healthy, brazen, you know, 20 somethings or younger in the military. So it'd be interesting to be able to see it. Someday we're going to have those Star Trek devices that we just go brink, brink, and we are able to see all these factors and we're not going to be guessing anymore. And we're not going to be having to poke and prod and look at poop and cells and whatever else. But until then, we learn how to do the testing. We learn how to do functional testing. We learn how to interpret it. We learn to use the knowledge of the biochemistry and the anatomy and physiology to make sense of situations, right? And so for me, I always want to bounce it off of what does the science tell me about how this is supposed to work? What does the science tell me about how it is working? That's the looking at the, you know, the parameters, the labs and stuff. And then what's the external manifestations, the symptoms, and asking the right questions is so critical, which is why we have, you know, a huge amount of it. And if you haven't, go back to that first section, because the more you study it, the more those questions, the way you question things come out, right? And the more, see, it's like, I want to teach, I should do that again. I should put it at the end too. I want to teach the Q&A, the history taking at the beginning. And then again, at the end, after you've got like all those pathways and lab testings down, because you look at it a little bit differently when you start to do that, because you can ask better questions, but you do need to learn how to ask the questions right at the beginning. But you don't always come up with the right questions because you don't have all the physiology, anatomy, and biochemistry down. Make sense? Great. Shelley, you have your hand up.
Yes, I had a couple questions. Yep. Let me lower my hand. The one question I had was primarily for reverse T3, given a normal thyroid panel, otherwise, if it's elevated, I know stress can cause that, but I was wondering about, because thyroid conversion from T4 to T3 requires selenium and iodine. And I get these intuitive hits, like for me, it's my test, but I knew I'd been under stress. So that's kind of a given at the time that was taken. But I also was craving Brazil nuts and something in my mind, I don't know why, I was taking iodine because I just thought that I might need to help my thyroid that way. Mm-hmm. But all my labs were normal except for that. So well,
let's go back to normal versus, you know, normal versus optimal.
So they're right in the middle.
Look at, right. But, yeah. Well, look at T3. And look at the ratio between free T3 and reverse T3.
Okay.
That gives you an idea. And it's a 20 to 1 ratio. And you can go to Stop the Thyroid Madness, has a little calculator, and you put your numbers in and it'll tell you what that number is. So that's important to know. Getting a hit on Brazil nuts and selenium, important, but also the other things that are involved in that conversion from T4 to T3, and which will push in the direction of reverse T3 if they're not optimized, gut health, liver function, mm-hmm. and cortisol levels, either too high or too low of cortisol levels, can mm-hmm. create that imbalance. So okay. Those are the things I would look at.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, good question.
Thanks.
Okay. You said a couple of questions. That was one.
Well, the other one was just, I was wondering if it was Alan Goldhammer's True North program that you went to for water fasting by chance.
Alan Goldhammer's program started after I did my water fast.
Oh, okay.
And I went up to visit him when I found out he'd opened it. And we just hung out and, you know, kind of explored his place, but it was a place called the Religious School of Natural Hygiene. And it was in Hollister, California. And of course, the guy was not a, he just, you know, got a missionary, whatever, a minister license just so he could teach people health and not get, you know, put in jail. And it was looking back over it, knowing what I now know, it wasn't the best run place, but it was a place, right? They didn't have medical supervision. They didn't have anybody. Goldhammer has an MD on staff. He has physical therapists and he's doing all kinds of testing on a regular basis with people. And it is important. It is important to watch that, to watch electrolytes because they can go crazy, to watch blood pressure, blood sugar, things like that. I actually coached a person through a 28-day water fast who lived locally, the husband of a friend of mine. He begged and pleaded that he wanted to do this and would I help him? And we had a very systematic approach to it. And he had to check in with me every day. He had to fill in a sheet that had his blood pressure and his ketones and his blood sugar, because I'm monitoring everything. And at one point, about 2 weeks in, he told me about some symptoms. So I got a little nervous. I was like, okay, you know, drink some fluids, whatever, add some stuff. And I had his wife check his pH and I want to make sure he wasn't going into ketoacidosis, but his blood sugar was down in the 80s. Mm. He was able to get off of his insulin. He was able to get off of his metformin. He was able to get off of his blood pressure medication. Mm-hmm. And so he had a doctor who was willing to work with him on getting down on those things. But at that point I said, you could go in. It was like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm like, you take him in tomorrow to the doctor and get these things tested. And I gave him some blood work and I wanted to see his electrolytes. And it turned out his magnesium and his sodium were way down. We put him on magnesium and sodium. He did not want to eat. He wanted to go 28 days because I'd gone 28 days. So he was going to go 28 days by hook or by crook. So he was willing to take a liquid magnesium and a liquid sodium supplement. And it brought him right back up. But when I tested him, his ketones were fine. His blood sugar was fine. The keto ratio with the ketones and the glucose were fine. His blood pressure was fine. The only thing that was off was that. But you know, somebody could get in trouble if they're not being monitored like that, right? Yeah.
I sat through Alan Goldhammer's lectures. I never did the program because I couldn't afford it at the time, but I just wanted to learn what he taught. And this was really interesting.
Yeah. He started it. I found out about it after I'd finished my fast and I was, you know, I was experimenting with my reintro stuff and going back to what was I going to be eating for the rest of my life. And I found out about it. I went up there. It was like 2-hour drive away.
Yeah.
I went up there and visited with him. And that was when he was very first starting it. And he was still married at the time. His wife was running it with him. And yeah, good stuff.
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah.
I have one more question. I note what I observed with myself is that my daughter had recently brought in a lot of watermelons home. And I just went to town because, God, I love watermelons. But what I noticed after eating them for about 3 days consistently is that all of a sudden I started to develop sensitivity in my teeth. And pain in my teeth. And I was wondering, does it demineralize your bones or something?
Well, were you just eating watermelon or were you eating also greens and green juices and the heavy mineral foods as well?
I was not taking heavy mineral foods. I always thought that watermelon had minerals. So, you know.
Comparatively speaking, I mean, watermelon doesn't have much of anything. It has, if you concentrate it, but it's mostly water, but it's sugar and it's bathing your mouth a lot, right? And because it caused demineralization that fast, that seems like far-fetched that it could demineralize your teeth that fast. But you know, if you eat too much of something, you get a sensitivity. If you have too much sweet stuff, your teeth get sensitive. And I'm not sure how to explain that, but I don't think you can demineralize that fast. But I think that you also, I don't know if you were testing your blood sugars during that time where your blood sugar is going high. There's any number of things. So if you are going to go on a watermelon binge, eat greens with it. You know, keep the mineral levels up, drink green juices, that kind of thing.
So that would increase the sensitivity of the teeth, the sugar from the watermelons? I'm not following the
logic. I've seen that happen with too much sugar. I don't know exactly what the mechanism is what I'm saying. I'm just postulating. I don't know that you can demineralize your teeth in 3 days.
Well, I mean, after I stopped eating it, the sensitivity went away.
Sensitivity went away. Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah. Right away or within a few days?
Within a few days.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. I'd have to like try to make sense of the mechanism that could do that. But if you're eating a lot of sweet stuff and you're not eating high mineral foods, like you typically eat a lot of green stuff and you get a lot of minerals. So suddenly your diet shifts and you're not getting those nutrients. It can have an effect on your teeth.
Lynn's suggesting maybe over water intoxication. So maybe I was peeing out a lot.
Even if
I ate like cookies and cakes and candies, I don't get that sensitivity in my teeth. But with the watermelon, yeah, I was peeing quite a bit. So I don't know. It was very weird.
And that
was just very disheartening because I love watermelon.
Yeah. So that Shelley says maybe gum inflammation irritating the nerves, right? Yeah. Lymph clearing out the tissues or such. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a diuretic for sure. So yeah, maybe it was just throwing off your mineral balances, but I've had that sensitivity in the teeth and I can never, well, pineapple. And that's all I think the bromelain maybe. If I eat too much pineapple, I don't do it anymore because of my blood sugar, but maybe it was because of my blood sugar if I think back. Yeah, it's a good thing to research to try to figure out a mechanism for it. But again, you know, I know some people like, you know, the recommendation of mono meals for a while and that can calm down your digestion. But I think that when there's that much sweet and you're peeing a lot, you might be losing a lot of your minerals. But I can't imagine your teeth getting, I think maybe the gum sensitivity, the gum inflammation is more of a likely scenario there.
Well, I can also go along with the mineral because I have that battle with minerals as it is. So anything will tip me over the edge in the wrong direction.
Right. So. Right. And you have low iron, so you might have
low a lot of things. So I'm very particular, but I wanted to tell you that I started taking the ionic minerals as well as the yellow dock and a complete change. I mean, I haven't gotten any testing done, but in terms of just being able to keep up with my little fur baby over here, jogging through the streets with her and stuff like that. And just very big, significant.
That's great. Change. So you're taking ionic iron or a combination?
I got all of my minerals in ionic form. So my magnesium, my iron, my chromium, my iodine, anything that I needed in mineral form, I just got it in the ionic version.
Right. Awesome. I think they're much better absorbed. We run the risk, you know, especially if you have low stomach acid, which if you have low minerals, it's probably related to stomach acid. Then how do you break down? How do you have the stomach power to break down all those capsules and the cellulose and, you know, they're in forms where they're bound. So getting it in ionic form where you just take it before you take anything, any food, and boom, it gets absorbed right through the lining, even down, you know, through the mouth and the esophagus. Yeah, good. That's good to hear. That's what I always recommend to people as much as possible. Good. Anybody else before we go?
I had a question if I could just ask it. Sure. So type it. As far as minerals, I always get nauseous whenever I try to take minerals, just, you know, on an empty stomach, especially zinc. So
liquid zinc or
pill form, if I break it in half, it's still, you know, can make me nauseous. So I try to eat it with food, but then you're not absorbing it as well. So it's a frustration.
Try the ionics. Try the liquid ionics and see if that makes a difference. Just go slow with them. Don't like bombard your system with huge amounts.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. And if that happens, if you do get nauseous, try a little bit of vitamin C or apple cider vinegar or something acidic in there.
Okay.
That'll help the absorption of it as well.
Great. Thanks.
And with the ionic, I notice I have to drink a lot more liquids or else, you know, my system doesn't like it either.
So does it slow down your digestion or what does it
do? No. It's just that I would get like headaches if I take the ionics and I'm not drinking a lot of water.
Much concentration, maybe. How much water do you take with it?
Well, I take about 16 ounces.
Do you dilute them in there or do you take them as a shot and then?
I do a dropper full at a time.
A dropper full and then some water, a dropper full and then water?
Well, I drop a full in my 16 ounces of water.
Oh, okay, got it. So mm-hmm. you put it in there and you drink that. Got it. Yeah.
Throughout the day.
Probably the best way to do it because it's the most dilute, right? Because otherwise, like, you know, there's a lot of zinc. If you take a dropper full of zinc and just have it in like a drop of water or try to take it.
Oh, no, I did a concoction. I mixed all of mine together.
All together. And then you go 16 ounces and you drink it across the day.
I took all the bottles of all my ionic minerals and I mixed them all together. And then I just take a dropper full about three times a day in my water, because I was like, I'm not going to be doing dealing with all that.
Right.
Yeah, I have like five different ionic minerals. And I was like,
I would do that when I traveled. I haven't traveled all year, but when I would travel and I'd take my minerals, I would just take a bigger bottle and I'd go, okay, how much do I need for this many days? And I put it all in a cup and then I'd split it between the bottles. So then I just had to take that one dropper or whatever it turned out to be.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad that worked for you.
That and the yellow dock. And yeah,
I love yellow dock. Yellow dock actually helps to increase stomach acid as well. So it has the iron in it and other minerals, but it also helps to improve the absorption. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Did I miss anything? Thank you for a great call. You're welcome. Where do you get these ionics? There's a lot of places that have it. Trace Minerals Research has them. Good State is another company that has them. There's a company called EIDON that I know that the Hippocrates Institute uses. Premier Research has a couple, I think. I think they just have the zinc. And there's one or two other. There's a company called Ultimate Superfoods that has some. And I've used their magnesium and their iodine and other things like that. Okay. It doesn't taste good. What do you mix it with? Put some vitamin C or some lemon juice or some apple cider vinegar in there.
I use lemon and vitamin C.
Lemon and vitamin C. Yeah. Okay. Anything else in here that I missed? Speak now or forever hold your peace. I don't always watch. Can you take it for a long time or just a short time? It's with herbs, you know, it's hard to just give a straight answer. I think that it's good to vary things and just take them for a while. Sometimes taking it for a month with 3 days off, sometimes taking it 6 days a week and a day off. I think yellow dock certainly has a lot of iron in it. So you do want to test your iron and make sure you don't overload with it. Because I've seen people go from having their iron like at 30 or 40 and 6 weeks later have it at 90 or 100. That quickly. So I would experiment with monitoring it and make sure. What is the brand? What's the blood chemistry? Blood chemistry is the software. Oh, you were wondering what software that was. That's the it's called ODX, and you put your chemistry in there and we have access to that. We just have to get that set up. I don't know who's doing that these days, but I will find out to get you guys set up for it. They gave us, I asked years ago, I have an account with them. I bought their account. I bought it when they first started, the very first day. I think I was one of the first people to get it. So I got a really good deal. But they gave me two different accounts. And I said, hey, I have two different accounts here. And I'm not a multi-practitioner office. Can I give the students in INE or NEPT access to my account? And is there a way to protect my credit card information from being exposed to both of these? And so they said, oh, well, we can just set you up accounts for all your people. It still shares my account, but I don't use, I have an unlimited number of lab reports I can run every month. So we were able to get that. The downside is if you're actually working with real clients, everybody else that's in the program can share that so they can see it. So we have people like put a, you know, LDJ as the somehow on the person's name. So we know that that's a Lynn client, et cetera. So there's not as much of that privacy stuff that you might want to be concerned about, but it's so many of you are using it. Who uses it? I know Isabel uses it. And yeah, a lot of you use it and it is a really nice program. Yeah, very nice. It gives you really good reports and it's a great way to learn blood chemistry because you can go in there and it says, you know, whatever the parameter is high or low, you can click it from within the report online and it'll give you all this background information about that. So it's a really great way to learn your blood chemistry as well. All right, Tom O'Brien tells the story of gluten sensitivity on frozen sample. Oh yeah, that was Tom O'Brien, right, 100 years or so. And a lot of them tested positive, yeah. He also tells the story about the nun who went gluten-free and was getting better, 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 but she got to this point where she couldn't figure out why she wasn't getting any better. It turns out she was taking communion, and the small amount of gluten in the little communion that she was taking a couple of times a week was keeping her sick. And he said, you know, they do have gluten-free communion. You just have to go talk to your pastor. And she switched and boom, that small amount, it's shocking. That small amount. All right. Thank you guys so much for being here. Appreciate all the interaction. I hope this was helpful. And we'll see. This is our last one for the year. I think we have one more. Let me see what our next, I think we have one more call next week. Let's see what's coming up. Next week we have the INE office hours where you can just come and ask questions. We have open coaching and support is next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. And then those of you who got as a bonus, it was a full pay bonus for NEPTers that joined starting last year and this year, and it's a practical herbal therapeutics class that I'm starting on the 12th. I'm excited about that. And then if you were not eligible, we're going to give you a coupon code so that you can get it for, you know, to cover our cost of administrating it. So.
And what was that class again?
It's called Practical Herbal Therapeutics. It starts with a four-hour workshop on the 12th, and it's going to be done. You know, I'm going to do a lot of it in my kitchen and you've seen it when you've been to my house, that herb area that I have in the dining room. We're going to do a lot of it there. And really it's practical. It's like, here are the herbs, not the 450 that I studied when I went to acupuncture school and David Winston's class, and half of them I can't pronounce and half of them you can't find. It's like, what are the practical herbs that I actually use on a regular basis that are easy to find that you can help people incorporate into their foods and into their beverages. And so I'm going to do that. And so the first day is a 4-hour workshop-y thing. And then after that, it's 2 hours once a week in January, starting, I guess, the first week in January, Thursdays. And it'll all be recorded and all that. So I'm excited about it. I'm super excited about it. I think it's going to be really fun to do.
Was the information sent out already?
It's supposed to get sent out. I can't remember, either today or tomorrow. It'll be sent out very soon.
Dr. Rita Marie, what was the qualifying factors for that? Because I think that was advertised prior to my deciding for sure if I was going to join or not.
It was a full pay at the event, kind of. Yeah, full pay at the event. Yeah, yeah. And so a lot of you who joined in June got it, and so a lot of you who joined last year got it as well. But we're gonna offer it for like $297 for people already in NEPT. And it's all live. It's all live. I'm so excited. So, yeah. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.